The Westwood One Podcast Network.
Never quit radio. All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ Podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit Podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit Podcast. My name's Andrew. I'm the producer, joined today by Marcus Melanie Trail. Hey guys, how you doing?
Hello.
Great.
Did I say y'all's names?
Then we're back. Yeah.
I think it was merged together.
It is. We're married.
Once again, subbing in for Morgan.
We got a freaking awesome guest on the show today. Victor Marks is a, I guess, former Marine.
No such thing.
Always Marine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Always Marine. And humanitarian, high-risk humanitarian. He can also disarm you really quickly. What do you say, less than a second?
Handgun. Anything, right?
Yeah, I think so. Guy's pretty incredible. So, can't wait to get to that episode.
Well, how many times you had a gun pulled on you to where you get that good at it? I can't wait to hear the... I'm sure there's a good backstory behind it.
Yeah, I'm sure. So, before we get to that interview, Patreon question of the day is... Jaden asks, when you're under extreme circumstances and stress, is there any kind of coping mechanisms or ways that can help calm your nerves?
Me? I shut my mind off. I just start gardening. I'm not the right person to ask because I like to do really old people things.
That's a coping mechanism.
Yeah. I mean, I go outside and walk around and I put my hands in the dirt.
Oh, yeah. If it's an overall, just an atmosphere, life kind of stressing you out, I always go back to the basics. Start in the beginning of how you got to that exact position and clear your mind, just like she said. If it's an intense situation, stare right in front of you. The most important thing you need to remember is, and this isn't a joke or anything, is breathing, all right? Start focusing on inhaling and exhaling, telling yourself to do that, because the person who loses their breath first is the one that freaks out quick and the one that loses everything. So, all right, I mean, you'll catch yourself holding your breath in a tense situation, and then everything else starts fluttering apart because it's trying to realign itself. So the more intense it gets, the more... When you're laying on the ground dying, the last thing that you do is breathe. Their body will shut down all the way down to a breath. If you're in that kind of situation, that's what you do. And whatever's standing right in front of you, you're looking around your situation and you find the weakest point, and then you focus all your energy on that to get yourself out of that situation, whether or not you have to go around it, above it, or straight through it. And at no point in time do you ever lose your breathing pattern. That's all you focus on. Pain will go away and you just move.
I heard a great piece of advice the other day about putting an ice cube on the back of your neck if you're ever in an extreme stress or anxiety standpoint, because it helps reground you. It keeps your head from being like everywhere and going, because you're so focused on whatever is bothering you. Putting that ice cube on you kind of just, it's that little quick shock to be like, whoa, wait a second.
That
like,
sounds dumb.
You're here. Hey, but if it works, it works.
What?
I'm going to try it. It works.
I'm going to try it.
Marcus won't be trying
You know what that is, right?
Nope.
That's all right. I'm holding an ice cube on the back of my neck. What could I possibly be thinking about?
Well, I think that's what it's supposed to do.
That's exactly what
distract
that is.
You from.
It's like when you have a stomach ache and they say to tap a hammer on your toe so you stop thinking about your stomach. Yeah, well,
it's something completely opposite of whatever you're snatched into, and that is how you pull your mind out of a bad thought. You ever get earworms where you start thinking about the same song over and over again?
Oh yeah.
There's actually a tune you can whistle or hum that clears that.
Really?
Yeah. Somebody came up. Y'all know. Y'all never heard of that?
Nope.
It's a jingle. It's a popular one. When I say it, I'll try to think of it.
I'll look it up.
When you hear it, you're like, oh, is that what? It's like, yeah, that. Whenever you get something cluttered in your head and you need to clear your mind, you just whistle that tune.
Well, I think Marcus had the best answer out of all of these. Deep breathing.
Breathe. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, when a woman's in labor, that's all you can do is breathe. And there is no more much of a panic than what's going on right there. Separating humans. I mean, that's the most violent thing I've ever seen. Not violent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've had my ass whipped all across the globe, so I know what I'm talking about. And that's what they talk about, breathing, right? And growing up martial arts, I mean, first thing, take pain. Like, you ever stubbed your toe? You're like, hi-ya! You know what I'm talking about? It's like, or anybody gets hurt, like, it's screaming real loud because it exhales all. That's what a scream is.
Breathing.
And then you breathe, take that deep breath. It's kind of like running that everything to that zone.
Thanks for asking the question, Jaden. We appreciate it. Hopefully this was insightful at the least. Maybe you can go to YouTube and look up the tune. You got to whistle. Maybe that'll help too.
Yeah, or maybe it made us dumber.
If you want exclusive access to the show, bonus behind the scenes content, and get to have your questions asked to our hosts on the show every week, you can join us on Patreon, patreon.com/teamneverquit. We also have some really cool gear, some things in a box that there's some surprises in there that are really cool, like a unique challenge coin and some other stuff that I'll leave to your day that you get your box. But patreon.com/teamneverquit.
Box in itself is useful if you need it afterwards.
Yeah, there's a box.
Put stuff
the
in
box
it.
Itself is a box. Patreon.com, Team Never Quit. Let's get on to our interview.
First of all, thanks you guys again for, and how did y'all, just so I know, how did y'all hear about me or what we do or what was that like?
Yeah, someone shared a documentary about you to Kara that runs our social media, and then she shared it with us.
And then I've studied martial arts my whole life, and kind of I've been to the martial arts super show and did all the tournaments. And matter of fact, Chuck Norris, when he started that whole kick drugs out of America deal, I was just coming of age when he started that program in the schools and the tournaments and whatnot.
Kidding.
Yeah. So I've known your name for a long time.
Oh well, get that's a chance very cool. To. Very cool.
Have you on at something?
Well, it's I appreciate what y'all do sincerely, and I'm thankful that y'all are using your platform and leverage to help so many people in the uniqueness and the great fit of who y'all are. You know, because it's needed, man. It's needed more than ever.
Well, thank you.
Oh yeah, no, it's definitely a blessing, and it's turned into one of the deals. There's so many magnificent people out there, and because everyone's connected to them through their phone, they miss the whole why it's special connection. And when you bring everybody in, and we just kind of sit around, and everybody realizes, man, we're a lot more similar than you think.
Yeah, that is the truth. So for me, my father didn't claim me as his kid when he got my mom pregnant. I think she was married when she was like 15, had a baby when she was 16. So their marriage wasn't meant. Under those circumstances, very highly unlikely they would make it. But, you know, he went through a very hard time in his life. He was a drug dealer and a pimp for a while. My mother would end up marrying 6 times. So I went to 14 schools, lived in 17 houses. But I would say my life was impacted in a negative way because of the unstable environment, the lack of a father, which resulted in me experiencing tons of insecurity, but worse, and the source of this was, abuse. So I was physically abused, sexually, emotionally, and tortured and left for dead when I was a kid. So that was a framework on which my life was built.
Not to stop you, but the way I've always kind of perceived, because of how you've turned that into the lifestyle that you have now, I had a great childhood, but then it was a tough childhood. Morgan and I being born twins and early and all that stuff like that. And with guys like us, I had to grow up and become of age so I could join the military to go into a program to get my ass handed to me like you did when you were a kid.
Totally.
Right. So it's just like what happened was you got thrown into the program before I did. you know what I mean? If you keep that kind of warrior, I used to never talk about this when I was a kid or in the military, but there's a line that we walk, kind of a path, right? That every hard time we go through shaves off a little bit of that weakness and shows us, because true martial arts would be the ability to never throw a punch, right? Just to get out of the way and block the whole time and not escalate to the point to where you have to, but to get to that maximum point, you have to go through all the dark side of the yin and yang, right? You got to feed that dark wolf. How you came into the game was early and exceptional. I didn't mean to cut you off. I just wanted to tell you that's,
When I heard your documentary, or not your documentary, but a video interview when I was watching it, and you were talking about the abuse that you experienced. I just cried because I grew up in a very loving home, and I could not imagine a dad. I mean, I have the best dad in the world, so I can't imagine someone having that experience.
It just broke my heart for you. Dude has five daughters. All right, Cage is right. I mean, check, you know how big families are. There's five of these daughters running around here.
I love it. I love it. I've got three daughters. And we got two grandkids now. They're both granddaughters, and we got one more on the way. So, yeah. We like making them pretty little babies.
Oh, man. That, yeah. Well, you know, Cajun women can do that.
I love the fact that you came from such a stable, good home life, because that's the way it's supposed to be, right? And I think part of my story is telling people that God can redeem the worst that evil has done to you. And just like you said, Marcus, I mean, the way we're formed and conditioned to become warriors of life, it works if we're willing to be victorious through it, not victims, to become bitter, you know, better, not bitter. Some people stay in a victim mentality their whole life, and you lose hope, you lose direction, you never excel to the point where I think we were made to be. And with that said, I still absolutely just consider myself like the most ordinary person.
Oh yeah.
I just finished being at three Army bases. They're like 3 or 4 day events. Actually, Tim Kennedy came and joined me.
Yeah, I love Tim. Great guy.
I appreciate him. But you know what? It's I'm telling the soldiers, look, you know, you can be ordinary and still be able to do extraordinary things in your life. It's in hard times. Thank goodness there are hard times. Now, I of course, I'd rather them be controlled, but we can't always pick the way we're, I think, developed and made into.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. You said it perfect. There are no bad times. There's just hard ones. It's what you're not prepared or trained for. And you got to, I've always kind of thought guys like you and I had to exist because somewhere back in the day, the family dynamic dropped off.
Right.
And because of that, if you had some males out there, some wolves out there that weren't being trained by a woman and a man.
Yep.
I mean, her family's just like, it's perfect. It's not, no family's perfect, but I mean, you need the.
My dad's been married multiple times.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. with the love and the kindness that's shown. And the minute that kind of breaks apart and the kids aren't raising that, then you just set off to what can turn into wolves. Because the most dangerous thing on this planet is an undisciplined human mind.
Right.
The body's designed to take anything. When you were talking about becoming extraordinary, if you think about it, focus it in your head, you think about it when you walk around, you talk about it, it will form around you. And then the body will, imagine all your gifts are already tucked in there. It's just a matter of which ones you want to bring out.
Right. I agree. It's, you know, so a person listening right now may go, well, I went through a hard time too, but I'm not able to get past it. How do I? So there are things I call lies based in reality that, when you believe a lie long enough, it becomes your own truth. When it's negative, it can tear a person down, destroy relationships, never allow a person to excel, to again be who I think we're made to be. Like there was one time I was held down on top of some wood pallets in a barn in the middle of the summer, and I have a concave chest, you know, as a birth defect as a kid. And it's actually, you can see it online or in my book, it's so severe. As a kid, the only thing that would stop your fingers from touching was actually my spinal cord. So a very evil stepfather who we were, you know, my mother had hooked up with, he actually poured water in my chest and took a cattle prod and stuck the tip of it where that water pulled up leave a mark. And when he'd hit it, my body would convulse because I'm being electrocuted, you know, shocked. And here's what's happened. I tell people, you don't actually take a quick breath afterwards. The majority of the time after you get shocked, the air that's trapped in your lungs comes out. So it sounds like, and then you take a breath. Well, this man was so evil, when he would shock me and that air would come out and I'd take a breath, he'd lean down and he would go, boy, do you know what that sound is? It's a sound of hope leaving your body. And those lies, which were based in reality, would so condition my mind that it took me years to work through that. But I would tell a person, the first thing you got to do is just never give up. Don't quit. Don't ever quit on your journey. of being made whole and well and fully operational, because your story's not done yet. And without hope, people do give up. But I learned that in life. You know what? He's not the one that controlled my life. He's not the one that gave me hope. He's just an evil person that did horrible things. The shame was never mine, which is important for people to understand. The shame is never theirs when people have done horrible things. And the second thing is, crazy thoughts don't make you crazy.
At such a young age, how did you hold on to hope? Was there someone in your life that was like saying, okay, it's okay, we're going to get through this, or someone positive?
There definitely were people in my life, whether it would be a teacher or a coach, or, you know, if we went to church, I'd hear something. Those were points of, I would say, encouragement or impact. But really what I saw, because, you know, there's impactful things in your life and then there's great outcomes. I want long-term outcomes. What I would always tell myself is, one day I will grow up. One day I will make it. One day I'll be on my own. And, you know, it's like the gun disarm. If y'all have seen that video where I do that gun disarm, people love it. You know, it's timed at 1/10 of a second and it, you know, all that. But very few ever ask me, why did you get so good at it?
Okay, yeah, because when someone told me that for the first time, I was like, man, where's he standing where he's got a gun pulled on him so many times he becomes so damn fast at it?
Yeah, well, some of the places I've been.
All right.
No, you know what? My stepfather, when I was 7 years old, put me in a chair and he pulled out his revolver, pulled back the hammer, and he would tap the gun to the side of my head. And he said, boy, if you've ever tell anybody what I've done to you, I'll just blow your brains out and tell the police you got my gun and shot yourself.
So as a little kid
in my mind, I said, one day I will grow up and no one will ever be able to put a gun to my head where I can't take it away. And that's what drove me.
Yeah.
That's what drove me to be able to have that speed. But the reality is, at a certain point, drivenness has got to be turned into being led. Because if you're just driven by certain things in your past, it can really, that can start to backfire on you, where you want to excel to be the top 1% in anything you do and, you know, an outlier, but then you can't turn the drivenness off. So I tell people that's where I think spirituality helped me with God. And I was like, you know, I read in Psalms 23, he's a good shepherd and he'll lead you beside still waters, you know? And I go, I'm ready to be led. So that has helped me to understand that when you have these negative things imprinted in your mind, and it could be as an adult, you know, we've guys like us, we've gone through difficult things, you know, in other countries and seen death and dying and injustice. So, you know, how do we come back from that? And again, we've got to have hope, but that attitude, I'm never quitting, no matter what's happening right now. And look, I've been there. I just want your listeners to know I know what it's like to chew on a cold barrel. I know what it's like to be I was telling somebody today, I've been in a padded room before. Even though my marriage is great now, celebrating 31 years this week.
Congratulations.
Awesome.
Yeah, we just hit 9 years ourselves.
Yeah.
Awesome. And I can see y'all's love, man, through your social media. Incredible. But, you know, I got to work on my running because she chases me all around the house, that woman. But you know what? We were separated twice and I struggled with things. So I just would tell people, you can't give up on this journey of healing. And when times are dark, believe me, God can redeem the worst if you just don't give up.
And always I always look at it like if those dark times would make you appreciate the shine.
Oh, for sure.
And when you start, when you get into that situation, when you're like, hey, man, that's not going to happen to me again. I'm going to turn myself into this. That's a fuel for our willpower. So it drives us in the direction. And hopefully we run into somebody, the teacher, because when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And then they have that. They're the ones that kind of rein in, put those rails up on the side and be like, hey, man, we're going to keep you in here. It's just like we're pulling you back in a slingshot. And eventually, man, we're going to let you go. And when you get out there, all those tools and everything will be going to come out. And you think about a lot of stuff when you get older, especially when you start teaching the younger ones. You're like, man, how did I learn that? And when did there was never a point when I was like, oh, I became this. It's like you just start, your drive keeps you going to when all of a sudden you're standing there and somebody will walk up and be like, hey, could you show me how to do this? I know you're the, you're one of the good ones at it. I'm like, what? When did that happen? Man, when did I get old? Or, you know what I'm talking
right?
about?
So right.
The first 12, 15, 20 years, we're in buildings. We're learning all that we can learn inside the building. And then when we get launched out into the environment, that's still a schoolhouse too. It's like the big garden. And we're out here trying to make it work. And we're doing that with each other. And we create our own realities, and they're perfect when we're by ourselves. And the trick is when you walk out and you run into somebody else's reality, if you're trained for it. And if you can pick up, you know, before they even get close enough to you, what they're all about. Just by the way they carry themselves and what they say, that comes with time. That comes with like time and rank, right? The first 40 years of this just for training. You're trying to figure out the man that you're not.
I love hearing you say that.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, a lot of young guys, they're trying to learn, they're trying to become something, and I tell young men, I was sitting on a curb in a parking lot in front of a health club, got my cap on, you know, and I'm the old Miyagi, I'm just minding my business, and this dude comes walking out, he's all swole, he's got a muscle shirt on, he walks by me, and you know, sometimes I probably poke the bear too much, but I said, hey. I said, what are you so afraid of, man? He walked over to me. He's standing over me like a tower. He says, well, I ain't afraid of you. I said, I you shouldn't be. I said, but he said, why would you say I'm afraid? He starts yelling. I just said, well, you're posturing yourself like you're ready to fight any and everybody because you're afraid of something.
Yeah.
He's like, whoa. I said, as anybody, have you ever had a man look at you and tell you, you're squared away, you got it? He goes, well, no. I says, well, I can tell through all the exterior. You really do have what it takes, man. And aww. you don't have to do it. Just be you. And he let out a big sigh of relief. And he goes, who are you? And I said, well, I'm no one of consequence.
Mr. Miyagi.
I said, Google my name. I got a film out and I've helped some guys, you know, do some things. And I've done some things. And I watched him go to his vehicle. He opened it up and I could see his reaction. He was like, ah. So it's just what you said. Man, we've earned a responsibility we have to the next generation to share our knowledge, to share our experience. And a friend of mine, Captain Coffey, who was a POW in Vietnam, we were in Hawaii and we spoke at an event together. And I remember we sat down afterwards, he said, Victor, you know, we have a responsibility with the story we've been given to share to help other people, just like you, Marcus. And you've done a great job at that. Because without that hardship, I'm not sure we'd be sitting here visiting.
Oh, sure.
I have a question. I'm sorry. No, and I know this isn't about him, but have you ever run into your stepdad again?
What a great question. The answer is yes. Here's what happened. He ended up getting put in prison, and he escaped prison out of the state of Alabama. It was a federal deal. He was on the NBC Nightly News. He was trafficking drugs in from the out of big thing. Well, he went to prison. He escaped. They never caught him. And years later, he came back into the country, turned himself in. And I had become married. I got involved in ministry. I was traveling, speaking. And I felt like I was supposed to go visit this guy.
How'd you find him?
Well, he did his full time. He got out, and my sister, half-sister, is his full daughter, said, hey, he's on the river in a little bitty trailer, and he used to be a pretty wealthy guy. And this was in Mississippi. I said, let me give him his address. So I went, knocked on the door, and he got nervous, and then he tried to intimidate me, which was the most bizarre thing. And I was like, hey, I'm not that little kid anymore. And I said, I'm full-grown man, master martial arts, Marine. And I saw he had actually just had open heart surgery. You can see that big zipper. Yeah. I was like, I will unzip you.
Oh, my God. Take that thing out.
I'll make it look like an accident on this little. But, you know, the redemptive factor, one of the best weapons I've ever used for me in my life, and I love weapons, is, and I share this when I speak, is forgiveness. And I chose that day to give up my right to hurt him back for hurting me. Now, I am all about justice. You know, I have a ISIS flag because of work we've done the last 5 years intensely in Iraq and Syria. I mean, the last pump I was in, my wife was with me, and we actually went to an ISIS confinement camp with over 70,000 wives and children of ISIS fighters representing 50 countries. We've built an orphanage there, and we've helped recover a number of children out of ISIS territory and all kind of stuff. So I believe in justice, you know. But I looked at him that day, and I just said, you know what? I pitied him. He couldn't harm me anymore. And I was actually in the hospital when he was dying. And he, the last day I saw him, he introduced me to his nurse, and he said, hey, nurse, this is my son.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was like, oh, my God. And he said, hey, I'm proud of him. He said, he became kind of like a karate preacher guy, I don't know what, but he helps people. And it made me feel good for him to say that. And then he said, he's been worried about my eternity, but he doesn't have to worry anymore. I made it right with God last night. And the nurse actually, it was truly a holy moment. She backed up, and I knew now why I came back into his life. And I said, you know, I thought to myself, Lord, what do you want me to say? I'm done. I know I'm done. And I really felt like I was just supposed to look right at him and tell him I love him. And I did. I said, Dad, I love you. And he turned for the first time in my life. He said, boy, I love you too.
Oh, my gosh.
And then I took a pillow and I just put it over his face.
Right?
And
felt yeah, yeah. yeah.
That's what I'm waiting for. I'm like, when are you going to unzip him?
Yeah, yeah. Go through the light. Go through the light.
Oh my God.
Now that we got past that, how's this pillow?
Did you forgive him?
It was a my pillow.
Right, no, yeah, exactly. Thank you, Michael.
Yeah. You know what? I did forgive him. A lot of people don't understand what is forgiveness. Forgiveness, my best definition, is giving up our right to hurt someone back for hurting us. I believe in justice. I believe people should pay a consequence for their actions, and me forgiving someone, is it based on whether they like me or accept it or not? And it's like my wife has forgiven me many times. And I remember telling her one time, why are you forgiving me? I just, you know, just blew a gasket. She goes, I have to, honey, for me, so that I can stay, you know, because unforgiveness turns into bitterness, and bitterness will ruin and control a person's life when it doesn't have to. So,
No, it's the ultimate black belt test.
It is.
So what happened was through all your training to get as proficient as you were, and then to become a black belt and being a preacher, that was the test to do the whole forgiveness to the one person that made you as hard as you had to be. And then in that moment, you kind of step back and people, I mean, it frees every bad moment you ever had with that person when you realize that they realized how bad they messed up. And it was in your hands whether they go up or down. Man, it's something. And it gives you a new perspective. And with that, you just limitless.
You know, I feel like sometimes when people don't forgive others who've done them wrong, it hardens a part of our heart that actually our wife or children may need.
Yeah.
Because if part of our heart is hard, then we can't give love to someone who needs it. And really, we can't receive love because we're limited in our capacity. So, you know, that was part of the process for me because I wanted to be the best dad I could be. And the things I learned from him negative, I'm thankful because he told me, he showed me what I didn't want to be as a father, right?
Yeah, right.
And so, again, things are redeemable, and many people are caught up in addictions and horrible relationships and lack of self-worth, and that's one of the things we love helping people with. That's why we made two films on – they're called Triggered and Triggered 2 for people who struggle with post-traumatic stress. And they're for – I mean, they're documentaries to help people understand what it is, And know there's hope. And then there's a full documentary on my life story. If anybody listening wants to watch it, you know, they can go to my website, victormarks.com, and we've posted it on there. And you'll actually be able to meet through this full documentary, it's a 55-minute film, my real biological dad, who came back into my life, right? Because that was my stepfather did all the crazy. My real biological dad, who was living in Baton Rouge at the time, you know, mm-hmm. wrote me a letter while I was in the Marines. And he's like, hey, boy, you know I never been a dad to you. And
like a Ricky Bobby moment.
It was definitely a Ricky Bobby.
That's what
I can relate him running around a track in his drawers on fire looking for blue fire.
Help me, Oprah.
Is your documentary on Netflix or anything?
No, we have it on YouTube and we have it on our website. We wanted the most eyes to be able to watch it, and it's in 15 different languages.
Oh, wow.
And we have people from all over the
Congratulations.
World.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Watch it. And, you know, so the things coming forward in 2020, you know, there's a book that's going to come out, a new book, but and there's supposed to be a film associated with that. But my wife and I's goal, you know, after 30 years and everything we went through, we said, let's help as many people as we can. And you talked about social media. We reach about 1.2 million people a week in our English aspects. And then we have a complete Arabic social media as well, where we reach a little over a million a week as well. So I'm more known in Iraq and Syria.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy.
I like what you said about the with the kids kind of the way I looked at it is that's the next version of you. It's like Mark 1, Mod 2. Just all the doors are shut, and it's kind of like a brand new vehicle. You ain't put any miles on it yet. And you literally spent the first part, your life training yourself up to retrain yourself up so it can keep it going. And then all the hard times, I put pressure on my kids that I just want to see how they react, because I know they're going to run into it when they're out there, because I did.
Yeah.
And it takes that. I mean, a strong mom can get them through it no problem.
I'm mama hen. I like to comfort.
Yeah, that opposite. That's what's so good about it. You know, you marry your opposite, your kids will be perfect.
Yeah, you know, women are life givers, and men are protectors, providers, and it's what we do. And my wife and I, when we speak at events and marriage conferences, and I just say, hey, if we run in our own lanes, it's great. It's when we start crossing over, it can be a little more consternation that's needed. So wives have to let the husbands raise their kids and help them launch, and then dads have to be willing to let moms be those life givers. It's just when a mom may need a cut in a umbilical cord when their kid's in their 30s, you know, still living in the basement.
That'll be me. Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely have my umbilical cord.
Keep that thing clean, though.
Reel it in.
Yeah. We got a failure to launch. All right.
Okay. Can you tell our listeners how you got involved with the humanitarian work?
Oh, sure. When ISIS invaded Iraq, we got contacted by the Kurdistan Regional Government, and they said there's a number of girls who have been held captive by ISIS. You know, we've heard about you. It was through a friend. And then they asked, could we come help with trauma relief? So I didn't want to do it. You know, I just got back from Burma. I did a 30-day pump in there because, you know, we do high-risk humanitarian work, and it's just our way to try to help and give back, because we had a great career as martial arts in California and Hawaii, and then we started doing this where we wanted to help folks. So again, I didn't want to do it. I was just getting over the mosquito fever. My wife was like, honey, there's a need. You need to put together a team and go. And I was like, woman, be quiet, you know, let me be. And I told her, I said, find some other organizations. There's bigger, better, more powerful. They got money. Let them go do it. And about 2 weeks later, she came back and said, hey, babe, no one wants to take the gig. You know, ISIS, they're cutting heads off. It's scaring people. She goes, come on. I was like, ugh. So, you know, I said, all right. So I put together a quick team. And we had a bunch of former guys, for security, because we had to put together our own team. You know, we had no QRF. This was all our doing. And I put together some good psychologists to trauma specialists. And I said, we're going in. Then my wife, you know, I mean, my wife goes, honey, I think I'm supposed to go with you.
Mm.
I was like, no. not.
Because then I'll just watch out for you the whole time. As
he
opposed
wouldn't
to,
let
to
me.
Because my main focus is always that. Like, I had to go through everything I had to go through just to protect what this is.
Right.
So I know exactly what you're going through on that one. I'm like,
I mean, that's crazy making. Can you imagine? So that your wife's going to pump with you into non-restrictive areas. So I'm like, oh my God.
I had to join the military, go into SEAL training to go over there and do crap like that.
Exactly.
You through all that.
So we definitely did some intense debating, to say the least. And finally I just said, why do you want to go, honey? Why in the world? I mean, I've got some Delta guys, some former SEAL team. I've got Force Recon. I said, you know, all of them are saying, no way. Don't you dare bring your wife. How are you going to lead the team? And I go, I know. Do you know my wife? She's just steady on. So I asked her, why do you want to go? And she says, when you find the girls, and I know you will, you can't hug them, but I can.
Oh, yeah.
I love your wife. I don't even know her.
Right? And I'm just like.
that's some woman knowledge there. I wasn't thinking about that.
Because there was about 30 women that had been held captive, girls. And
they don't want some another guy. Yeah, yeah.
No way. So finally, you know, I was like, how can I argue with that? So, you know, I show all kind of videos, you know, bad things happening, really, you know, stuff you can't really see. And my wife goes, okay, babe, what's the worst that can happen? We die? And I'm like, yeah, we die. And then this is her response. Well, then don't we win? Because I have faith, and I have faith that we're going to go to heaven, so we still win anyway.
Oh, my gosh.
Are wearing me out.
I was like, okay, that's not the worst. The worst thing is that we don't die, and we have to go through that whole line.
Well, okay.
Who is your wife? Hey. We need to have her on.
I know, right? I deal with that. Say that's awesome. That's like Cajun women, man. You get,
no, she's from California.
She's her family's from Louisiana.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the bloodline goes back to the swamp.
Yeah,
check the swamp.
Yeah, man, she just migrated to California for a little bit.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, so yeah, the weirdest question my wife has ever asked me. She goes, and I normally don't ever say this, but you know we're getting ready to load up, and she goes, honey, if we get wrapped up. You will put a bullet in me, won't you? Oh. You will let them take me. I'm like, what?
Oh my kind gosh.
Of is? He goes, don't you dare let them take me. I was like, oh my gosh. I don't want to have this conversation.
Yeah, no, don't worry. But if I have one left after I get done with all of them, then we can talk about it.
That's what I said. Well, I had one friend come in. His name is Ironhead, and he's 17 years of Delta. And I called him up. I said, hey, Birch. This is Greg Birch, retired Sergeant Major. Just Greg. We done some things before together in Burma. But I said, Greg, you want to go to a beautiful place with a lot of sand, just not a lot of water? And he said, Victor, I didn't lose anything over there, and I don't need to go back.
Right.
And I said, I know. I said, Greg, I'm taking a team, and Eileen is going. And he got quiet. I said, I need one person. If something goes sideways, I need one person who can get her out. If we get in a firefight, I need one person who can just disappear. He said, give me the date and time. I'll be at your house night before.
Oh, my gosh. That's a good friend.
Good friend. And he had never gone back, and he went back for me and Eileen. We love him to no end. But you know what? We've been able to help over 41,000 kids so far.
So you got the girls.
The girls had been set in a refugee camp. We got to them, helped them with psychological help. And then when things changed for us on this first time in was a girl that Eileen was literally hugging who had been through because there were some girls who had been raped, one girl 30 times before lunch. I mean, you're talking the most evil, evil, evil. That's why they didn't want to live anymore. But Eileen literally, I've got a picture of it. I'll send it to y'all. But this girl, she's hugging, sitting next to her, keeps looking at Eileen's watch. And it was a nice watch I'd given her for, I think, a birthday anniversary or something. And this young girl kept fixating on it. And Eileen goes, do you like my watch? She said, yeah. Eileen takes her watch off and gives it to her. And she says, you can have it. I'm like, hey, I gave you that watch.
Something he would say.
Yeah. And then the girl, get this, y'all. This girl goes, y'all really care about our sisters, meaning girls still being held captive. We're like, yeah, of course. She goes, and I'm not kidding y'all. She reaches in her pocket. She goes, when I ran out of the building, when they were being freed, she goes, I grabbed the Emir's iPhone. Do you want it?
Oh, my God.
Nice work.
And I just went, holy smokes. Of course, all my guys on the team that heard, they're turning going, you have an Emir of ISIS?
Yeah, iPhone. That's
it's loaded. Well, and then that just opened up floodgates to where we got so heavily involved. And all of it's been driven by love. We haven't received any money from our U.S. government. And we brought in Dave Eubank of Free Burma Rangers. You want a great interview on your podcast, get Dave in. You know what? We've just seen – I mean, when you bring a baby home from a fighting area in Mosul that's parents were just murdered by ISIS, and you're walking with that child at 2 in the morning who's screaming because he knows he'll never see his parents again – That's as hard of a wake-up call as, you know, you can get. And then the next morning, watching my wife dance with this baby to music and seeing them laugh, and I go, wow, what a mission we're set on to help those who've been affected by ISIS and terrorism and war. So that's how we got involved, and that's what we've done. We can't do it forever, but we're looking to start training a younger generation who may have the same passion to do the deal.
Amen, brother.
That's crazy.
That's awesome.
That's not us.
Huh? Every time he starts talking, I got quiet. I started getting fired. I was like, babe, man, let's go do that.
Yeah, no.
Get on the line, walk down there, snatch all the fools out.
I'll cheer him on from here.
I got a bunch of buddies just itching to do stuff like that.
Oh, I know. I know. We've
Hell, you run around with them.
Right. I mean, we got a list.
You are one. What am I talking about?
It's almost like we were talking about this earlier, like you're a mix between Tim Kennedy and Jeremy Courtney. Do you know who either of those are?
I know Tim, but I don't know Jeremy.
Jeremy Courtney personally. Was on our podcast a couple years ago, and he, him and his wife moved to Iraq.
Oh, yeah. Love.
Yes. Love Anyway is what it's called. And they like basically just take care. They're Christians, but they take care of everybody.
They're feeding kids.
They're feeding kids. No. Yeah.
And people. No, they're, you know what? They're one of the few groups that I actually would say they're doing a good work. Because there's a lot of people that claim to do stuff.
Uh-huh.
In everything.
Yeah.
Sure.
King sex trafficking to, you know, NGO work, and I'm like, man. But they, preemptive love.
Preemptive love, that's it. Yeah, their slogan is Love Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, Jeremy and them, I've never met them, but aware of them because, you know, it's a small community over there when you run out. They do a great job, and I'm thankful for them. But, you know, there's so many needs. We're based in Colorado now. But we still have an orphanage over there. We were in Syria not long ago. We've been asked to go to Ukraine.
Can you tell us? I know we want to hear about your Never Give Up tour.
Thank you. Thanks for asking. So a few years ago, some friends of mine in the Army let me know that things weren't going well for active duty Army personnel. And the suicide rate was starting to increase. And they were, you know, this was at a Pentagon level, because I've spoken to leadership up there and done some things and have great relationships, but people just let me know we need help. So that's why we worked on Triggered and Triggered 2 and put together some corresponding workbooks. So I was asked by some key people, what would you recommend to help us? So I came up with a three-pronged approach. One, a tour that would put me in front of troops, active duty on bases, meet them where they're at, here or overseas, and do fun stuff. Do my martial arts gun stuff, bring one of my dogs, my canines, let them do some bite work. Bring in people like Tim Kennedy, other speakers. Marcus, you're somebody on my happy list.
Roger that. Just ask. Yeah. Whatever you need.
It's on the podcast now.
Yeah, it's there.
And then we would give away free resources of my film or my life story in a book form, you know. And then I have a text number where soldiers can text me literally anytime they want. And myself, if I'm on the text, or my team will respond to them. And basically, it's a different approach to suicide awareness because, I mean, the three bases I've just been on, two of them were having suicides every other week and weekly. And, you know, there's a time where you stop using a broken model and use something different. So that was my first prong approach. Second one is to a partner is Reboot Alliance. They have area support groups all around military bases where people can attend with their wife or spouse or single and be encouraged by others who are going through. And then the last prong is Mighty Oaks with Chad Robichaud.
Yeah.
And
yeah, we know Mighty Oaks.
Yeah, he's such a good guy. First time I met Chad, he's a Cajun. First time I met him, I walked up to him, and he didn't know me. I was hiding in a crowd. He just spoke and said, Mr. Robichaud, is there a height limit on being able to pull a trigger as a Marine? And he looked at me, and he just goes, I used to be taller. I said, all right. So we hit it off. We're close friends. So, you know, sending people active duty to his camps or veterans, it's all paid for. And a lot of our military doesn't even know this, right? So we started this, and we did a, you know, proof of concept. And the only thing I would say that needs to be done through this tour, because we have bases lined up we're supposed to go to, and that's just Army, but we're going to branch out, is you have to have the support of the command.
Yeah.
If you don't, if it's just a chaplain sponsored event, you know, I mean, I was a Marine. You hear chaplain's going to do something.
Oh, yeah, I get it, man.
It's like, oh, great. That's good for them. So we are saving lives because it's that critical. And I've already gotten feedback where people are saying, man, I've been contemplating suicide. And
have you done anything with Gary Sinise?
I've not met Gary or hooked up yet. So
we have someone very close to us that is on the board of Mighty Oaks.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, it's the Never Give Up Tour is an absolute life-saving initiative that we've got going. And it's through the Victor Marks Group, because we have our ministry, All Things Possible. Then we have the Victor Marks Group, which does other things like this. And, you know, we're really happy and hopeful that we'll be able to continue because it matters. You know, it's hard to do work overseas knowing that your brothers and sisters are taking their lives back here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that aches. So we decided to step into that space, and kind of do things the way we do. And it's working good so far. Although I won't say who, but some people gave me access to a tank and said, hey, would you like to drive it? I'm so like, are you kidding me? Of course.
Let me think about it for a second. Okay.
Yeah. As I was climbing in the turret, they put me in and the last thing they said is, because I go, hey, I've never driven one. They go, well, there's a brake, the gas, the kill switch, and, you know, here's the steering wheel. I said, good enough.
Roger that.
And they go, we've never taken it up to fourth gear. That's a top gear. They shouldn't have told a Cajun Marine that.
No.
That thing barreling in fourth. I could hear them on the headsets laughing their head off.
Oh.
I was like, what's the worst going to happen? If I hit something, we'll run over it.
All right. They never started in fourth. We're going to start in fourth. How about that? Go from there.
That's funny.
So yeah, what we are looking for with the Never Give Up Tour is sponsors, people who want to give us gear or stuff to give to the soldiers, and you know, we're just kicking this thing off. I have a few bases under us, but yeah, we're looking at anybody who wants to go. Hey, when you go to bases, yeah, we'll donate this, we'll give them that or whatever. So people can hit us up at victormarks.com. And we will be glad to entertain sponsorship.
Yep.
What about just regular listeners? How can they get involved, or what can they do?
Well, you know, we always tell folks, follow us on social media, that in itself is almost like a journal, so they can track with us and follow with us. And people like to pray can pray. People who don't believe in God can not pray and still
find him.
Yeah. Yeah. they can pray to nobody. And then, you know, we're a nonprofit organization, and I tell people we're not hurting for money. So, but we can always gain support to help us to do more. Mm-hmm. It's as simple as that. And, if they go to our website, we've got a brand new website. It's just smoking cool. And that easily explains what we do. And we're here to help. If they need help, they can contact us, and we will give people listening free resources to help them on their journey as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on and telling us your story.
Welcome to the team. We got your dossier right here.
It's great to be here. And you know what? My wife and I look forward to seeing y'all in person and doing some stuff and having fun.
Oh, we already set it up. We'll be down at the border with you.
Yeah, we'll meet at the border, and one day we'll bring y'all out to the ranch if you want to come.
No, kick it off from there or after. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. All right, y'all.
All right, thanks.
God bless you, man. Be good.
Hey, God bless y'all. Love y'all.
Love you. Bye.
So each week we get to do something super special. We get to share stories that you guys write into us. If you don't know about this, you got to head over to the website right now, teamneverquit.com/podcast. There's a button that says share your story. On that page, you're going to find tons of stories from our listeners, just like you guys, that have written in and shared what it is that you're going through, what you're fighting with, what you're pushing through. The stories are incredible. They're not always your own story. Sometimes they're stories about other people. And that leads me right into today's story, Honor Thy Father by Stephen. Let's jump right into that. My story starts about 3.5 years ago when I received a call from one of my sisters saying that our dad had passed away at 93 years old. He had a fulfilling life, literally born in a log cabin in Montana, then moved to Wisconsin during the Great Depression. After World War II kicked off, he decided to fight with the best and became a Marine, fighting all through the South Pacific. After the war, he met and fell in love with our mother, had 3 kids, providing a loving, supportive environment to grow up in. Always there for us and never said no when I asked him to play catch. Taught me how to drive when I was 14, backed the boat into the water, shoot a gun responsibly, and took me fishing all the time. And of course, watched Green Bay Packer games and military movies and documentaries. Now I share this to show what a great positive male role model he was and still is. Now after his death, I had something like an unreachable itch. I didn't know what it was, but something was there. About 1.5 years ago, I heard Jose Sanchez's story on TNQ and was amazed how he became the light in his darkness. He also talked about running the Marine Corps Marathon and what a challenge it was to finish. Then it hit me like a Mack truck. I need to run that marathon to honor my dad. I immediately called my wife and told her. She said, okay, do it. Now, being an avid non-runner, I started run-walking with my wife, who supported and encouraged me to keep pushing on. I worked my way up to running 5Ks and then a half marathon, all with my sights on the Marine Corps Marathon. I talked with my runner friends and read countless articles on training for a marathon, telling myself this is all for him. Now, training in Florida in the summer's heat was part of what I wanted. I wanted all the pain and the suffering because of all the pain and suffering he must have went through during the war. I just wasn't being shot at. Finally, we got to race day, and I was beside myself with anticipation. 1.5 years in the making. My wife was there, as well as my sisters and one of my nephews, and friends who came to DC. The first 15 miles was in the rain, downpours at times, but this was part of the pain. Never once did I think about quitting. When I finished the race, I could feel my dad's presence and see his smile. I never in 1,000,000 years thought I'd run a marathon, but I did, and I honored my dad carrying his flag that was presented to me at his funeral all the way. Now, because my dad was an advocate for veterans, I wanted to help our vets. So we raised about $3,500 that went to the Semper Fi Fund and also to a local charity that helps people dealing with cancer. I'm thankful for Jose's story and all the other stories your guests have shared. Thank you, sincerely, Stephen.
That's so cool, Stephen, that you did that. I mean, not only for yourself, but for your dad, and carried on his memory and continuing to carry that on through your passion to want to be just like him.
It's like we can't really step in and be a man until your father actually passes away. And you know, everything they used to say to you and that you would hear that you said you would never say, you catch yourself saying them once he's passed on. And it's just like, that was the last door that was open. And you carry in that spirit, man, you just kind of, and it just engulfs who you are. And it reminds you what they did teach you and how special they were. And, to recognize that and to push through those limits, that's awesome, brother, man. Thank you for writing in and sharing that. Seriously.
Thanks for sharing your story. If you'd like to share your story, head over to teamneverquit.com/podcast. There's a share your story button in the navigation. Click on it. You can actually read a ton of other people's stories. I'm sure they'll be inspiring to you and help you with your journey. And we'd also love to continue reading more stories. So make sure you submit your story over there.
As soon as I heard his first video, I recognized his accent as my family. I didn't get the Cajun accent because I left to Texas too young. But he sounds like one of my uncles.
Well, his last name is Marks, and Marksville's right up the road, right? Their family
yeah, but
probably...
his last name is definitely not French.
Well, neither is Marksville, right? They're probably the Germans came in and settled that. And then they met when they got there, and then here we go.
But
and y'all know y'all. I mean, Louisiana, y'all can.
Yeah, I love that we had a Cajun on, and I love what he's doing. I mean, my heart is just... right there with everything that he's doing, and I could just see him.
Oh, yeah. I don't ever see her binge watch a couple shows over and over again, but there was one back in the day called Machine Gun Preacher. And I mean,
oh my gosh,
if it has
I love
to do with,
that movie.
With the Lord and saving kids, man, and
me.
You know, my ass is over there freaking.
I know. And he said that he's training the younger generation. I'm thinking, are we that much younger than him? Are we the same age? The fact that he's been married for 31 years, I knew he was a little bit older than us, but I love what he's doing.
Yeah, y'all make sure you go check out everything he's got going on, the documentaries, his social media, everything, because it seems like he's right up our alley of the type of people we love to support.
Yeah, and I mean,
those are the best stories. Those of us who have been born into the end of the game early, right? You started your adversity early, and look what it produced. So,
but
and
people
thank you
like
for...
that too that have strong marriages. I love having other people to look up to that have had a marriage longer than ours,
sure.
And that is also a marriage built on Christ and a marriage of serving others. Those are the kind of people that I look up to.
Man, that's what draws us closer together. It's like when we lose our clarity, do some charity. And the longer we go without doing that, it's kind of like you start, other stuff fills it. That's a great point, babe. We can handle anything, me and you. I ain't worried about it. I love you.
If you want to be the first one to know when we drop new episodes, and make sure you subscribe to the podcast, press the purple subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or any other major podcast player to be notified the moment we release a new episode. Share the episode with a friend if you like to. We love you guys. Thanks for coming back every single week.
Seriously, we can't thank y'all enough. Each and every day we bring somebody on here and bring them into the team. We learn something new about ourselves and the situations that we've all been in or get stuck in. And it's great when a coach comes in here and points something out that you weren't even focusing on. So thanks again for doing that. You know, again, y'all, thanks for bringing us back. We love y'all. God bless you. We're out.